Владимир Путин наградил Рамзана Кадырова орденом почета.
Награда присвоена главе Чечни за достигнутые трудовые успехи.
Ранее Кадыров был удостоен звания Героя Российской
Федерации. Глава Чечни Рамзан Кадыров поручил секретарю Совбеза Республики
Чечни Рамзан Кадыров. В своем инстаграме он написал, что
узнал. Если Рамзан Кадыров открыто заявляет...
Исследование, очевидно, что Рамзану Кадырову ничего не угрожает.
All of a sudden we're not talking about Борис Немцов anymore. Instead, it's become all about Рамзан Кадыров. We're not focusing on the shocking assassination of a prominent opposition leader in the shadow of the Kremlin. Now it's all about clan warfare in the Kremlin. And suddenly, the question on everybody's mind isn't whether Vladimir Putin ordered Nemtsov's assassination. The issue of the day is whether the FSB is trying to take down Kadyrov, and whether it is even possible to remove the powerful, volatile, and mercurial Chechen leader. With Putin's support, Kadyrov has long run Chechnya like a warlord. And now, with Putin conspicuously invisible, he's locked in a high-stakes war with some of the Kremlin's most powerful overlords. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. Joining me in the studio is Aslan Dokhaev, director of RFERL's North Caucasus Service. Welcome to the podcast, Aslan.
Thank you, Brian.
And joining us on the Skype line from London is Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Moscow-based history and sociology magazine NZ. Welcome, Kirill.
Hi.
And also joining us via Skype from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is Sean Guillory of the University of Pittsburgh Center for Russian and Eastern European Studies, author of Sean's Russia blog and host of the newly launched SRB podcast. Welcome back, Sean.
Hello.
All right. Well, it's been a wild ride for a couple of weeks. Going back to the Nemtsov assassination, because a lot's happened since then, and we're going to cover a lot of ground. But this was my take so far as I tried to unpack all these things as they came down. At first, it seemed the Kremlin had all its ducks in a row. Right? Suspects were rounded up. A mastermind was fingered, Zaur Dudayev, a man with close ties to Kadyrov. Dudayev reportedly confessed and said his motive was revenge for derisive comments Nemtsov had made about Islam. Kadyrov then publicly praised Dudayev, and Putin gave Kadyrov a medal. That's the Cliff Notes version of the first several days of developments. It looked neat, it looked clean, and there were no loose ends, no need to find who ordered the killing. It was also deeply sinister. The message from the Kremlin to the opposition seemed to be at the time, yeah, Kadyrov did this and we know it and we're not going to do a damn thing about it, so watch your backs. At least that's how it looked to me initially. Very cynical, very frightening, very, very sinister. But then this tight little package started to unravel. Media reports, including in the pro-Kremlin media, began to claim that Dudayev had retracted his confession, said he was tortured. His neighbors said he wasn't really that religious. He was a heavy drinker and a drug user. Then Novaya Gazeta reports, and this was interesting, Novaya Gazeta, opposition paper, citing law enforcement officials. Now, they have law enforcement sources, but still, I mean, this coming out in Novaya Gazeta was interesting, that the true suspect was actually this mysterious Chechen security officer, also with close ties to Kadyrov, identified only as Major Ruslan. Also, apparently, he had a hit list with other opposition figures on it as well, including Mikhail Khodorkovsky and Echo Moskvy editor-in-chief Venediktov. The Kremlin's muddled narrative, and that's all you can call it, seemed to point to a power struggle. Ramzan Kadyrov is powerful. He has thousands of loyal men, armed men, at his disposal, and he's long enjoyed Putin's support. But he's also acquired powerful enemies, including Kremlin Chief of Staff Sergei Ivanov, his deputy Vyacheslav Volodin, and FSB Chief Alexander Bortnikov. And Kadyrov's enemies now appear to be using the Nemtsov assassination to take him down a peg or two or even maybe more. Aslan, you watch Kadyrov more than most of us, probably more than it's healthy for anybody to watch another human being. I just gave you kind of my rundown to how I watch this drama as it unfolds. What's your take? What do you see going on here?
I think the FSB version of the events began to unravel, in my view, as soon as we heard Kadyrov actually praising the chiefs, the main suspect in the murder. He said that he was a Russian patriot, he was a good Muslim, etc., etc. So he was sending a signal that he does not agree with the version of the events which the FSB and Bortnikov put forward. Maybe he had some ideas about what exactly may have happened. We don't know. We also know that the conflict between Kadyrov and the FSB goes back to a lot of years ago. Now, for example, in 2007, when the FSB did not allow Kadyrov's bodyguards to enter the premises, the compound of the FSB in Grozny, his people actually welded the gate into the entrance of the FSB and held them hostages for, I hear, for about 3 days.
Back in 2007, so shortly after he came to power, actually.
Yeah. And Patrushev had to intervene personally in order to solve the situation. So the FSB also was not happy about his HR policies in Chechnya. A lot of people who are now Kadyrov's bodyguards or his close associates are former fighters. So the FSB had qualms about all these people, and they express that openly sometimes. So it goes back to a lot of years back, and these recent revelations, the leaks to Novaya Gazeta and to other sources, they indicate that we are seeing a flare-up of this hostility between this local leader and this.
Is there a Siloviki war element to this too? Because a lot of Kadyrov support is in the MVD, in the Interior Ministry, and there's inter-service rivalry that could be overlapping with the personal animosity toward Kadyrov.
I think that the FSB can be very jealous sometimes of people who are rising in influence in Russia. If we go back again in history, in recent history, if you remember in 2007, same year, the head of Gosnarkokontrol, Viktor Cherkesov, published an article in Kommersant, not indicating, not fingering anyone, not pointing fingers, that the, as he called it in those days, internecine feud among special services is detrimental to Russia. So it was like, you know, saying there is some feud.
That was the Siloviki War of 2007. That was in the midst of a...
It happened after his deputy was arrested by the FSB, we remember. When Stepashin, another FSB career officer, tried to turn his audit chamber into a silovoye ведомство, into a power structure, the FSB arrested several of his deputies. So FSB can be jealous of people who are getting influential in Russia. So I think in this case, they're sending a message to Kadyrov, you should know your place.
Do you think they were just saying you should know your place, or do you think they were trying to either pin the Nemtsov assassination on him, or the more sinister one is they knew he was going to do it, they let it happen, and then they went after. Do you think
I think it's going to be increasingly difficult to pin it on him if the suspects keep denying their involvement. It might be pretty difficult. So.
Is this Major Ruslan that Novaya Gazeta is? Is this a fiction, or is this smell to you?
There is one figure among Chechen emigres. We know who they probably mean. It's Ruslan Geremeyev. Again, this is we don't know the whole information. It's difficult to say whether he was. Maybe he was. Maybe he wasn't. But I mean, it's not even important anymore. You know what we're seeing a turf war in Russia.
Right. Yeah, no, that's clear. Sean, what's your take? You've been following this closely. We've been chatting back and forth about it by Facebook. What's your take?
Yeah, it's quite interesting to see how this thing kind of unraveled, and it's also important to note that the line that came out about this having something to do with Charlie Hebdo first was positive by Kadyrov himself. And then it was reported also amongst sources.
It was leaked in the press. It was coming out. Nobody ever announced that motive.
No, it was never an official position on the part of the investigation. So there was never – Markin never made a official statement about it. There was no official statements from the FSB. So it's interesting that line came out and then everybody kind of grasped onto
right.
it.
Myself included,
Yeah, me too. And then the whole narrative, as you pointed out, just began to unravel. And it's really interesting the lead role of Moskovsky Komsomolets in all of this.
Yeah, yes.
I think it's really fascinating. And I mean, yesterday they published an editorial denouncing the interrogation of their reporter and the human rights officer that went and talked to Dudayev and called it, you know, a 1930s-style interrogation.
Yeah, and Moskovsky Komsomolets by no stretch of the imagination can be called an opposition paper. Yeah, it's very pro-Kremlin.
Right, and they were, and they're the ones that released the photos of the getaway car with Dudayev apparently in it, and said that this car was spotted near Nemtsov's residence way back in September and October. You know, Life News actually came out yesterday or the day before with the surveillance video of one of the suspects at his work confirming his alibi. So there's really interesting things coming out from the press and from really unlikely sources. So I find that quite fascinating. And of course, also when Novaya Gazeta came out with the article, you know, that was actually cited, you know, all over the place in far more places in the Russian press than normally Novaya Gazeta gets play.
Yeah.
So it's actually quite interesting. So this is the way the kind of public sphere has reacted to this is quite fascinating. And I think it's worth watching.
Yeah. And again, we're going to talk about this more in the second half. This is all happening as Putin is mysteriously invisible. Kirill, what was your let's walk through this with you. What was your takeaway?
First of all, I'd like to follow the idea of Sean about the, you know, media reaction. It's extremely important because speaking frankly, we know almost nothing about what's going on inside Kremlin. It's quite humiliating to discuss or to imagine seriously about, you know, what's going on up there and to try to analyze the rumors and so on. We are, in this case, we are just, you know, going back to criminology of the end of 1970s, beginning of
the 80s.
It's
even more opaque than that, I think.
Yes, of course. And discussing, you know, seriously what's happened to, you know, this poor Putin, you know, cancer or, you know, something like this. It's just humiliating. It's not a job for journalists and political analysts. But what could we discuss actually? First of all, it's some of the symptoms of what's going on in the system and in the society. And media is a very good example of this. Because, of course, there are two main plays till now, so far. It's Novaya Gazeta and Moskovsky Komsomolets.
Opposite ends of the media ideological spectrum, I might add.
Yeah, it's not, you know, different. It's not the wings of this spectrum, because Moskovsky Komsomolets never been, you know, 100% official and so on.
They're not Izvestia, but they're also not, you know, Dosh TV.
Yes, it's not oppositional, but they try to, you know, keep, you know, sort of balance how it's possible in modern, you know, media landscape in Russia. And don't forget that there is several columnists like, you know, Minkin and so on who play, you know, double game all the time. And the question is, how did these journalists from Moskovsky Komsomolets and Novaya Gazeta had been allowed to know all this stuff?
Well, it was leaked to them, obviously, by...
leaked or allowed. There are different, you know, ways of how to do this. If they're allowed, who allowed them? The investigation, the, you know, policemen, or, you know, some people from FSB or something like this. That is the question. That is very interesting. Don't forget, that was, you know, I think on Wednesday, yes, when Dmitry Muratov told that Novaya Gazeta could stop paper version in May. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the situation is, you know, so serious. It's just a gesture. It's a signal to potential investment from those who are, say, disappointed with the recent situation and try to, you know, invest in something different from now on. Mm-hmm. It's quite psychologically, I understand this gesture, and maybe politically. On the other dimension is, you know, it's not about, you know, historical analogies and so on, but it's structural. So what we see now, what do we see now? We see a starting point of the decline of all the system.
As I wrote yesterday, Putin may or may not be sick, but the system certainly is sick.
I read your blog, and I totally agree. So we see the symptoms, and it's interesting that these symptoms are, you know, universal. And in some sense, you know, you can find it in the history of, you know, Roman Empire with the whole this business, these so-called soldiers emperors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just brutal, violent soldiers right. from some, you know, far parts of the empire who became right. Soldiers. Kadyrov is trying to play the soldier emperor.
Mm-hmm.
It's he, of course. I'm not trying to underestimate his education, but I'm not sure that he knows about this historical parallel. But anyway, he found this interesting, important role. I think he is thinking that he's playing Stalin, someone from Georgia who well, is, this, you know, yeah, becoming, you I know.
Wanna...
Yes,
but, I want to get Aslan in on this because I mean Kadyrov's behavior since this whole thing has gone has been I mean the bar is pretty high when you talk about Kadyrov having strange behavior, but his behavior's been strange even for him. No, I mean we had the comments about Dadaev, the trip to the shooting range with the video of him, that bizarre video at the shooting range that he posted on his favorite mode of communication, Instagram, this love letter to Putin that he posted a couple of days ago. How did you interpret these things, Aslan, when you're watching Kadyrov? What does this indicate to you of the man in the system at this time and what it says about him in the system right now?
I think Kadyrov wants to affirm his eternal love for Putin, of course. Once again, he wants to reassure the Kremlin of his loyalty. He realizes that somebody is trying to undermine his position, and the only natural thing for him to do is to appeal to Putin. That's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And he positions himself as a loyal local cadre in the most volatile Russian region, and in that capacity he's more or less doing his job pretty well. And
but he wants to rise up. He covets a position.
I think he's a very young man and he's extremely ambitious. He says he is Putin's foot soldier, but we understand that he wants to become Putin's general or something like that.
Now, signs and signals, I mean, in a political system like Russia where the institutions are weak, the signs, signals, gestures are really important mode of communication. And when all this was going on, I couldn't help but remember back in 2013 when Surkov had just lost his job as deputy prime minister and government chief of staff. Where did he pop up the next day? Well, he popped up in Chechnya. He popped up fishing with Kadyrov. And the way most people interpreted that at the time, it was almost like this mafia signal. Surkov had just been pushed out of his post. He pops up in Chechnya with his Krisha. And it's basically the message I thought is he's saying, this is what I got. So don't even think about coming after me. Weeks later, he was back in the Kremlin as advisor to Putin. I'm not suggesting cause and effect, but I'm suggesting the power of symbolism and signals here. Surkov and Kadyrov are close allies. Kadyrov came to Surkov's rescue in Surkov's time of troubles. Do you see Surkov with the power to help influence the situation in Kadyrov's favor now, or is he just not powerful enough?
I do agree. I mean, symbols in politics sometimes are even more important than realities, and sending the right signal these days in Russia is extremely important. Kadyrov never abandons his friends or patrons or Krisha.
Mm-hmm.
So he showed to Surkov that he's standing behind him, that he's ready
and
to...
he showed everybody.
He showed everybody, yes. I mean, all other politicians would try to distance themselves from a politician who was in disgrace or whatever, you know, was retired from his position, but not Kadyrov. Kadyrov said, no, he's a Russian patriot, and he's a Chechen, and we're supporting him.
Mm-hmm. Do you see Surkov doing the same now?
I think Surkov is a very rational-minded, realistically thinking politician. He may be pulling some strings behind the scenes, but, I mean, we don't know.
Right.
But he thinks that Kadyrov is a successful project and it's one of his pet projects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only natural for us to assume that, yes, he's
doing what he can now, but it's unclear how much strength he has in this. Because when you look at the constellation of this in a kind of a criminological way, we know who Ramzan's enemies are in Moscow. It's Volodin, it's Ivanov, and it's Bortnikov, right? I mean, those are the three and big chunks of the FSB as well, along with Bortnikov. His supporters are Surkov, elements in the MVD, and of course Putin. Of course Putin. And this is a complex relationship that I kind of wanted to get into at some point. But I wanted to bring Sean and Kirill in here on the elements of Kremlinology. What do you see here? Kirill, I know the system's in crisis. That has become very evident in the last couple of weeks. But when you're looking at the kind of the constellation of forces within the power elite, what do we see here? Do we see a battle of the Titans? I mean, Kadyrov versus the FSB, because that is a battle of the Titans. I mean, Kadyrov is one of the most powerful people in Russia. He's not just a regional leader. He is a national politician in a lot of sense. And the FSB, of course, is the FSB. What do you see here? Is this some daylight struggle at the heart of the elite?
I mean, we've been wondering for months now if there is going to be some cracks within the elite and Putin circle. And this is actually coming from a place that I'm surprised by, because we were thinking more of the kind of oligarchic elements around mm-hmm. Putin would start. This is where the fracturing would occur. But, you know, it's worth considering the possible scenarios here and what gave the FSB the opening to do this and where they're actually going with this. You know, if they knew this murder was going to happen, it happened, and they're using this as an opportunity to go after Kadyrov and perhaps, you know, subordinate his people at least. That's one angle. The other possibility is that, and you suggested this week as well, is that perhaps Kadyrov has gotten off the leash mm-hmm. and really stepped into the center of the capital and committed a murder. And the FSB is saying, wait a second, this is a major security breach for us. This is our turf. You know, you could do this down in Chechnya. But this is a different situation if you're coming up and bringing this mess to the capital. And I think it's interesting. One of the things I took away from the Nova Gazeta article was the paragraph about when they stated what signal this was saying to the Kremlin, which was the patriots of Russia are ready and willing to take out the enemies of the state, and the Kremlin has been too soft.
Right.
And you either have to accept this murder or reward the people who committed it. It basically pushed the sent a signal to the Kremlin to move its hand to do something about this situation.
Right, and the Kremlin appears paralyzed right now, and its hand appears unable to move.
I mean, because Putin has a problem. Even if he wanted to move against Kadyrov, who is he going to replace him with? And maybe Aslan could you know, kind of give some indication of this. For me, like, you know, in terms of finding like some kind of historical parallel, I immediately thought of the Mingrelian affair in 1951, 52 in Georgia, and basically Stalin having to subordinate Beria by cleaning out his people in Georgia.
Right.
You know, this is one potential option. By kicking Kadyrov down a notch by cleaning out his, going after his people and cleaning them out.
Mm. No, Aslan, we were talking off mic about this a bit earlier today, where you were saying, basically making the same argument Sean was making about how the FSB is getting upset that Kadyrov is bringing his style of doing business into the heart of the capital. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because I thought that was pretty interesting what you had to say about it.
Yeah. As somebody put it, there are only two politicians in Russia, Putin and Kadyrov. The rest are clowns. So this is a sentiment that is gaining currency in today's Russia, and I suspect that not everyone likes that. Kadyrov has been meddling in the Ukraine, in neighboring territories of the North Caucasus, mm-hmm. in Moscow. He makes statements about international affairs. So he is becoming too big for his boots. And my hunch is that the FSB is sending this signal. You know, you should stick to Chechnya,
mm-hmm.
to the Chechen affairs. and mind your own business. Mm-hmm. In the Nemtsov affair, we have to ask ourselves who's benefiting. Mm-hmm. Cui bono? Is it Kadyrov? I doubt that. Mm-hmm. Is it Putin? I have my doubts again. So it's certainly not the Putin, Surkov, Kadyrov vertical.
Mm-hmm.
It's some other faction in Moscow. So, I mean, as to the heir to Kadyrov, Kadyrov himself indicated that he wants to see Adam Dilimkhanov as his heir. But he's increasingly becoming out of the question. So, again, we have this big question mark here. Who will succeed Kadyrov if the Kremlin, if Putin decides to remove mm-hmm. him? So it's getting increasingly difficult to remove him from his position.
Well, this is, I mean, Kadyrov's preferred option would be for him to move up to Moscow, Dilimkhanov to take over things in Chechnya, which is the same as Kadyrov having things in Chechnya. Dilimkhanov was the former commander of the battalion Severov, if I'm not mistaken.
It was a commander of several battalions. He's Kadyrov's close relative, and he's currently a Russian Duma deputy.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned Dilimkhanov, because this anticipated one of the things I wanted to go to with you, and that's that this FSB assault on Kadyrov has a prequel less than a month ago, if I'm not mistaken. This case in Dagestan, correct me if I mispronounce this name, Umakhanov, it would be the plot to assassinate Umakhanov is a regional leader in Dagestan. Can you give us a little background on that? Because this is a really interesting case, because it points to Dilimkhanov. That's what's interesting about
According
it.
To the FSB, assassination attempt took place last year in the spring. Two Chechen people were apprehended. Well, actually, the group contained more than two people, but two were arrested. And they were quietly arrested. Mm-hmm. And then earlier this week, mm-hmm. they were sentenced to 9 and 12 years in prison. And again, in this case, we have several Russian media outlets reporting that almost simultaneously. One of them is Novaya Gazeta. And the source is, of course, the FSB. The FSB spoke to Milushina about everything else. And again, we have these suspicions. Why now? Why now mm-hmm. the FSB decided to leak all this information? Clearly, it seems to me that this is connected also with the Nemtsov killing yeah. and with the attempts by the FSB to blacken both Kadyrov and Dilimkhanov.
Right. And that Nova Gazeta article came out saying that also that the FSB source told Nova Gazeta that Dilimkhanov was the Zakashik. He was the one that ordered that assassination. The naming of Dadaev as the prime suspect in the Nemtsov assassination, well, that also links to Dilimkhanov. He's a Dilimkhanov man, if I'm not mistaken. So this also seems coordinated. The Nemtsov assassination was not the last attempt here to kind of make an assault on Kadyrov. And then you had these media reports that came out this week. Oleg Kashin gave an interesting interview where he basically said the FSB let Kadyrov do this, the Nemtsov assassination, for the purpose of setting him up. And this is they're trying to take him down once and for all. Kirill, anything you want to add here?
It's a very interesting detail. We're speaking about, we're discussing, you know, North Caucasus, Chechnya, and so on. But in Western political terminology, historical terminology, it's a problem of post-colonial countries and territories. And it's a very good example, you know, what's going on up here there now, the relationship between Chechnya and Moscow and Dagestan and so on. It's a very rare occasion when former colonies began to blackmail the metropolis. It's quite interesting how it's happening. So I think it's a sort of, you know, a new word in politology and so on. The specialists in post-colonial studies and so on, they just must keep attention on this, because this is, Chechnya is an example of the territory where, you know, formerly the fight for independence failed. You know, now it's a part of Russian Federation, which is fake federation. At the same time, is you know, semi-independent territory with its leader who is trying to become a politic on the federal level. And it's an extremely new situation, not just, you know, in European or, you know, North American or, you know, whatever history. It's an absolutely new feature in even in Russian history. And that is very interesting. I think it must be discussed now.
Well, Stalin was a Georgian, and he managed to pull it off.
But Stalin was had a party background. He had, you know, he was a member of Russian Social Democratic Political Party. He was the same like, you know, Trotsky and so on. He was one of them. Kadyrov has absolutely different background.
Mm-hmm.
And that is extremely interesting. You know, someone from outside the circles of Moscow politics and ex-FSB, ex-KGB, you know, circles and so on, just appeared, pop up and say, so now I will be one of the, you know, main politician, political figures in your game. That is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Sean, anything to add to that? Or?
Yeah, I just wonder, I mean, if it's the case that Kadyrov is knocking on Putin's door and asking to be brought in to Moscow into the circle, you know, you have to wonder then what this murder of Nemtsov is about then. Like, yeah. if Kadyrov is the one that ordered this hit and his people, you know, carried it out, you know, what is he trying to say with this in terms of his ambitions to get to Moscow?
Yeah, there's. I mean, I'm certain Kadyrov is knocking on Putin's door and trying to get in Moscow. I've gone back and forth on whether he did this hit, whether he was behind this hit or not. I mean, this is so damn opaque that it's so hard to get your hands around it. Aslan, is this a case where Kadyrov's blackmailing the federal center? That's an interesting way of putting it.
He has been blackmailing the federal center for quite some time now. So there's nothing new. What is new is the scale.
Right.
He's getting increasingly bold.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting increasingly ambitious, of course, and his ambitions are definitely on the federal level. And he's a good reader of signals, by the way. I'm not sure Putin was satisfied with the status quo, is satisfied with the status quo in Russia, when one big corporation, the Chekist corporation, mm-hmm. runs the whole place. There were periods in recent Russian history when Putin tried to kind of diversify. Mm-hmm. You remember when he appointed Viktor Zubkov?
Yep.
Prime Minister in Russia. Viktor Zubkov was one of the few people who had no background in the security services. He appointed him, and he appointed his son-in-law, Serdyukov,
mm-hmm.
Defense Minister. Or was it the other way around? I can't remember. So in any case, I think Zubkov was appointed later, and Serdyukov even tried to resign from his position because he was related to Zubkov. So it was an attempt to create a new clan as opposed to the single Czechist mm-hmm. corporation that was running the country. But we know
and also appointing, ended. Making Medvedev his successor instead of Ivanov.
Absolutely.
Was similar.
Ramzan is kind of destroying the status quo
mm-hmm.
with his relentless rise and relentless ambition.
So this may be part of Putin's.
I think so.
I think so.
I think he sees him as a potential counterpoint to the situation in Russia.
Well, before we move on to the second half and we talk about Putin's mysterious disappearance, and also. By the way, you informed me today that Ramzan's not been seen in public for a few days, or did he appear today at the mosque for?
That's right. No, there was some footage on Chechen television, but it looked to us, it was old footage. It was archival footage, so we're not sure he's in Grozny.
It sounds exactly what happened in Moscow with Putin's alleged public appearance. But yeah. I wanted you to touch on this relationship between Kadyrov and Putin, because it's an interesting. There's a great book to be written about this relationship. I mean, you have Kadyrov, who's essentially a warlord, And you have Putin, who's essentially a spook and an operative. Now, spooks and warlords get along. They operate in the same circles, play different functions. How would you assess this relationship between the spook and the warlord?
Well, I think I'm not sure about Putin, but I think Kadyrov views Putin as a father figure in a way. And when his father was killed, the first person, of course, who tried to comfort him was Putin. And I think he's, you know, honestly loyal to him. Mm-hmm. He personally thinks that Putin is a father figure for him. So, Putin repays him by backing him full time.
He has always, yeah.
He has always backed him, you know. I know that there were many attempts to tell Putin that Kadyrov maybe not the right figure for such a difficult and, you know, unstable region as Chechnya, but Putin always backed Kadyrov 100%.
So it's not just a Krisha, it's a Kmotr.
It's a kind of, I think there's a pact between the two. Kadyrov provides a semblance of stability on the ground. This is what Moscow needs, and, you know, that's enough for Putin, and he's loyal to him.
Mm. Okay, well, in a few moments, we will continue our discussion and look at one man who's been conspicuously absent from public view as this whole drama played out this week, and I think we all know who that is. I'd like to remind you, you're listening to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. Joining me in the studio is Aslan Dokhayev, director of RFERL's North Caucasus Service. Joining me on the Skype line from London is Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Moscow-based history and sociology magazine NZ. And also joining us via Skype from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is Sean Guillory of the University of Pittsburgh's Center for East Russian and Eastern European Studies, author of Sean's Russia blog, and host of the newly launched SRB podcast. I'd also like to remind you, you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog and watch the newly launched Daily Vertical at rfrl.org. And you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical.
Владимир Путин встретился с главой Верховного суда.
Путин пропал.
И улучшение работы судов обсудил сегодня Владимир Путин с главой Верховного суда.
Последний раз президент Владимир Путин появлялся перед журналистами 5 марта.
На сайте Кремля тоже висит сообщение, что они встречаются 10 марта.
Говорит, что президент работает, что у него очень много встреч.
Служба Кремля также сообщает, что в понедельник Владимир Путин в Санкт-Петербурге встретился с президентом Киргизии Алмазбеком Атамбаевым.
Well, Vladimir Putin sort of appeared in public today, kind of. The Kremlin released photos and videos that they said was a meeting that took place today. But if you look at the Twitter, there's plenty of speculation that meeting may not have happened today. Putin hasn't appeared in public unambiguously without anybody questioning that it was actually him appearing in public since March 5th. Putin may be seriously ill or worse, or he may be fine, as Peskov says. He might be working with documents, right? But he's canceled a trip to Kazakhstan this week. He's canceled a series of meetings in Moscow. The hashtag Putin Umer, or Putin has died, is going mad on Twitter. It's trending like mad. There's been reports in the Russian media that he's had a stroke. There's been reports in the media that he's been overthrown in a hardline coup led by Ivanov. But whether Putin is sick or not, the system he presides over is far from healthy. Even if Putin, the man at the top, is in top form, the collective Putin, his informal ruling circle, is in deep distress. I see two possible explanations for Putin's disappearance from public view. I wrote about these in the blog this week. I talked about it on the daily Vertical today. Either he's fine and he's furiously working behind the scenes to calm down this clan warfare that appears to be breaking out. And it's not just the Kadyrov versus the FSB thing. I mean, there's all sorts of crazy stuff out there. There was a tweet yesterday from a very informed journalist that Sechin was about to get fired, for example. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. Maybe Putin's working behind the scenes to calm this stuff down.
Kadyrov also, like I said, has been missing for a couple of days. Hell, maybe they're having a powwow and hashing it out. I don't know. Or Putin is truly sick and or incapacitated. And the recent turbulence we've been witnessing is the symptoms of a highly personalized, highly centralized system going haywire when it loses its head. It could be a prelude to what the immediate post-Putin period might look like when he finally passes. Kirill, you're anxious to talk about the system as a whole. So which do you think it is, or do you see a third option? Is this Putin behind the scenes trying to calm this down, or is this the system reacting to a potentially incapacitated Putin?
Well, first of all, Moscow is a world capital of postmodernism, so they could, produce a lot of pictures of Putin being alive or, being dead or discussing whatever is happening. Kadyrov is disappearing in Moscow and then reappearing somewhere, in Kazan.
Yes, my dream was to produce a picture of Putin in this studio with me appearing on the Power Vertical podcast.
Yes, and shaking your hand, by the way.
Crushing it.
Yeah. Speaking seriously, there are, two points. First of all, of course, it's obvious. Of course, we can compare if he's seriously ill. Now, let's speculate a bit about this. Just compare Russia to, say, France in the 1980s when, do you remember that François Mitterrand
was always
had,
sick, yeah.
had a, you know, had a cancer for 5, 6, 7 years. And he didn't appear, a lot in public during that
right,
time.
Right, but the difference
and
is the French political system has institutions
Absolutely.
That work.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
It wasn't a centralized system built
Absolutely.
Around Mitterrand.
Yes. However centralized, French political system could be, anyway, it works without or with or without.
Because it's based on institutions, not a person.
Yes, because it's a real republic, it's a real state, and so on. When I turn to Russia now, it's quite interesting that if Russia would be a totalitarian regime, the danger will not be so serious. Because totalitarian regimes they have their own system, which could work with or without leader, better or worse. Anyway, after Stalin's death, after, all these intrigues and, plots and so on, anyway, Soviet Union hadn't disappeared.
No, Soviet transitions were quite smooth,
Absolutely. Because that was a real, good old totalitarian regime. Yeah?
Right.
Putin's regime is authoritarian. What does it mean?
It's personalized.
Yes, personalized authoritarian regime, which, founded only on the informal relationships. So, and he's a sort of, sort of broker, not how it was, several years ago between, main parties or, groups and so on. No, he's a broker of, all the informal links inside the country. Whatever happened, in Sakhalin or, in Kazan or whatever, everything has its influence on Putin, and Putin has its influence on this situation, in ever...
So it's ruchnoye upravlenie on steroids.
Absolutely. And that's why, disappearance of such leader is extremely dangerous. And that's why how it's discussing, a lot. So my second point is it's about the tone, the intonation of how it's, discussing. I don't know if Sean, who is, a fervent and ardent follower of all the, rumors and so on Facebook, Twitter, and so on. I don't know. I'd like even, to ask him. So my feeling is the main feeling of the reactions of the discussions of the jokes and so on. It doesn't matter who is, producing them, pro opposition or pro official and so on. It's sort of relief. Mm-hmm. It's quite strange.
I saw relief and fear. I mean, I saw as much
fear.
It's
a mixture of relief and fear, but I never met any, signs of compassion.
Well, no, I didn't see any signs of compassion whatsoever.
Yeah. It's very important. Sean, what do you
think? Sean, actually, what's your take on all this?
I think the rumors express both a desire and fear because – you know, there may be a lot of people, and it's actually, it's interesting that you pointed out there is no compassion. but that's also because Putin is not a person. He's an institution in and of himself.
Right.
You know, people don't see him as a normal human being. He's never talked about as a regular person, and leaders tend not to be talked about that. They're not talked about in terms of having feelings. Putin especially, we don't know anything about his family life. We know very little about his personal life. You know, this is all subject of rumor itself too.
One of the rumors out there is that his girlfriend had a baby.
Right,
and that's where
exactly.
I had to get that into the podcast at some
point. And that's probably the most human of the rumors.
And the new hashtag now is not Putin is dead, but Putin's a dad. this is out there.
But it is this mixture of kind of desire and fear. That desire, he's finally gone, but fear is what happens now.
This wasn't just a rumor-driven story. I mean, the man hasn't appeared in public since March 5th.
And this would be my point, and it goes along with what Kirill says, but I would actually expand it outside of it being indicative of the Putin system. This is a Russian historical problem. Mm-hmm. This is a problem where even in, you know, the 17th century, the problem of succession brings crisis to the Russian political system.
Always.
The only time it didn't was really in the 19th century, where the Romanovs actually produced male heirs that were somewhat competent in some capacity. But I mean, even when Stalin died, right? There was the shock it created in Soviet society was immense.
Right.
People didn't know what to do. Do you take down this picture? Do you put it up? There were fights in factories. There was, you know, intrigue behind the scenes. There was tanks deployed in the city of Moscow. There was really a crisis that occurred because Russia is very rich on authority. The state is very rich on authority, but very weak on governance.
Right.
And because there are weak institutions that nobody really believes in, including to some extent Putin himself. I think he'd like the institutions to work, but he's constantly brought in to go on manual control and interfere personally. I mean, look at the Nemtsov murder, right? What did he do? He took personal control over it.
Right.
So, I mean, he understands that the system, you know, perhaps unfortunately for him personally, doesn't operate on its own. And the system itself has been created to not operate on its own. But this is a long-term problem for Russian history, I think.
Well, I spent a lot of time – because I took this Putin health rumor much more seriously than – I was a Moscow correspondent in the 90s. I watched this song and dance with Yeltsin, you know, so many times. But with Putin – I never took these health rumors with Putin seriously until now. And this time, just to have him disappear from public view at such a time of crisis when there's so much open infighting in his inner circle going on and he disappears, I was like, oh, my God, something serious might be going on here. And I got to thinking, like, I mean, yeah, I think, like, oh, God, how are we going to cover this? Are we going to plan contingencies? And what would happen if he died? Well, if he died, they wouldn't announce it, obviously, right away until they had worked out among themselves what the hell they were going to do, A, or B, open clan warfare was going to break out, which either – so in the first scenario, you wouldn't see it. The second scenario, you would definitely see it. But when they decided what they were going to do and before they made the announcement – there were going to be there'd be tanks on the street. There'd have to be some kind of a show of force. I would think. I was kind of thinking this through last night about this, but this one I took a little bit seriously, and I'm still not sure what to make of it. And Aslan, now I learned again. I said again, Kadyrov's missing too. 3 days. What do you think? Maybe the two of them are like having a powwow and hammering this whole thing out. Or what do you make of all of this Putin disappearance amidst all of this stuff that is going on with Kadyrov and inside the elite?
Well, because we have so little information, we can only speculate.
We can only speculate,
about
but it's informed
going
speculation.
On. But, you know, I suspect that Putin's spook instincts kicked in and he went into damage control mode. I think Putin hates dysfunction and infighting. And I think what he's doing now is trying to reconcile the warring parties
quietly
behind the scenes, and he's trying to sweep everything under the proverbial carpet.
Yeah,
that's my reading of the situation, and the very fact that Ramzan is not seen in public either partially confirms this speculation of mine.
Now, if that were the case, though, and I think you probably are on the right track there, but if that were the case, wouldn't you make a couple of pro forma public appearances within a week to just reassure, so this frenzy doesn't start? Because you know it's going to start.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But again, we don't know what's going on. I mean, maybe there are regional leaders involved. Maybe there are some other issues. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are, you know, meetings going on frantically trying to find. Moscow is in crisis right now.
Yes.
A leading opposition politician was murdered not far from the Kremlin. It's a crisis by any standard.
Right.
So, and we know that in all the previous situations like that, Putin's instinct was to hush everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And to solve all the issues between the conflicting parties peacefully and without, you know, any public view.
My question is, does he still have that clout among all of the warring parties? This is another because this was always Putin's role. Nobody trusted each other as far as they could throw him, but they all trusted Putin, and this was Putin's ace in the hole. He was the decider in chief, if you will, within the elite. He was the honest broker, so to speak, although I'm loath to use the term honest and Putin in the same sentence ever. He was playing the role of 19th century Britain in continental Europe, being the honest broker. He did this time and time again. It became a standard of his rule. But I'm wondering now, does he have this kind of clout? Sean Kirill, what's your sense of that?
I think it Putin's clout is a matter of perception amongst the people that have given him that clout. Mm-hmm. And the question is that, you know, if he doesn't have that position as the so-called honest broker, then that might mean that these various factions around him are actually ready to go to actual conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a major shift in the consciousness of the people or the various yes. factions around Putin, and really could lead to a, you know, really how far are they willing to take is the question.
No, you hit it on the head, Sean. I mean, the thing that really, again, makes me think this is very serious is we're talking about people like Kadyrov, Bortnikov, Ivanov. What do those three people have in common? They're all very, very close to Putin. I mean, is Ivanov and Bortnikov going to act against Putin's wishes? Is Kadyrov? Well, somebody is, unless Putin really wants this big thing to go on, if you want to get ultra postmodern here.
I honestly don't think that Bortnikov or Ivanov are going to go against Putin. There are some indications that Bortnikov is a very flexible character, a bit of a weathercock. So I honestly doubt that. I don't think this whole affair was against Putin. It was primarily against Kadyrov, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
But isn't that against Putin by extension? I mean, if...
Yes, there is some element of that too. By the way, Patrushev, another powerful person, right. the head of the Security Council, just yesterday or 2 days ago praised Kadyrov's performance in Chechnya, praised him personally, praised his achievements in mm-hmm. Chechnya. So that's indicative of the mood among some, at least, of the Siloviki.
Right, and it also shows a split among Siloviki who are usually
True.
On the same page. Bortnikov, Patrushev, Ivanov are usually in the same camp whenever these flare-ups kind of break out. If you're seeing them on different... And Ivanov's been silent, by the way. Completely silent, but known to dislike Kadyrov.
Yes, but so far as Ivanov is concerned, we know that his son died quite recently, so it may be explained by his personal loss. So we're not sure exactly, you know, about his position. And I know he was meeting the patriarch or, you know, the synod or somebody and wasn't making any public statements about this event.
May I throw something
Sean, yeah,
into what this potential whatever's going on behind the scenes between the figures that we're talking about here. It also suggests where the real politics and power in Russia and behind Putin lie. And it doesn't, it actually, you know, suggests that these sanctions, for example, against Putin's kind of oligarchic elements are really targeting the wrong people in many ways in terms of trying to influence policy. I mean, if these people are really the kind of core of high politics, then I think this is worth, you know, thinking about.
You mean Kadyrov, Ivanov, Patrushev, Bortnikov, the Siloviki plus the warlord?
Right. I mean, our assumptions over the last year is that, you know, you put pressure on the bank mm-hmm. around Putin and on the money around Putin, and this will, you know, somehow change kind of the calculations of decision making. But really, the real power here, if this is incident or these events are really indications of the power structure, it really is behind the security forces again, and it's a good reminder of that.
Although the security forces get their money from, you know, the same place that the oligarchs get their money, the same place everybody gets their money, and that's rents from oil revenues, right? Mm-hmm. And the oil price again is low again. It's down below 60 all week. Anybody got any last thoughts before we wrap it up for this week? Kirill, you've been uncharacteristically silent for a long time.
I'm not specialist in criminology. I just want to, draw your attention to several facts. First of all, it's a documentary about Crimea, which will be on air on mm-hmm. 15th of March, mm-hmm. where it's supposed that Putin, you know, takes all responsibility for Crimean occupation. And that is a formal, extremely formal act. And formally, he is becoming a sort of, you know, criminal in Western opinion. Not informally, but formally. It's very important. Second, it's a new facts and, you know, a slow but interesting, extremely interesting investigation of Litvinenko's death in London. There are a lot of new facts there, and in the third fact is a long-awaited result on Boeing investigation. So these three factors are extremely important in the future, you know, fate of Putin. If three things will coincide, you know, in some point or in some, you know, point of view, which Putin is, you know, takes responsibility for everything, for Crimea, for Litvinenko, for Boeing, which is likely the third one, then we'll see an absolutely different situation inside Russia and outside Russia. And that is very important. And my personal opinion, Putin is known that as a person who is preferred to hide when something serious, you know, is going on. Just remember Kursk, Kursk. You know, and so on. So my opinion, he's just hiding because several very important things are happening now, and the combination of them are extremely dangerous for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. Russia will be different. And what we're seeing now is the struggle for the future of Russia. Unfortunately, it's not the future which a lot of us would like to see, but this is a very significant period in the history of post-communist Russia, and what we're seeing is a fight for power in Russia and for the future of it.
Yeah, no, it's like I said last week, every new period in Russian history post-Soviet has been born in violence. I mean, we had the events of October 1993, the shelling of the parliament, we had the apartment bombings in 1999, which gave birth to the Putin era. And I threw out the question, are we witnessing that right now with a combination from the Ukraine war to the Nemtsov assassination and now all of this that's happening, all this turbulence afterwards? One has to wonder if this is another one of those violent periods that's about to give birth to a new epoch in Russian history. All right, well, that's all we have time for today. I'd like to remind you, you have been listening to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFRL. Joining me in the studio here in Prague has been Aslan Dokhaev, director of RFRL's North Caucasus Service. Joining us on the Skype line from London has been Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Moscow-based history and sociology magazine NZ. And also joining us via Skype from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has been Sean Guillory of the University of Pittsburgh Center for Russian Eastern European Studies, author of Sean's Russia blog and host of the newly launched SRB podcast. Thank you all for an enlightening discussion.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank our patient, brilliant, and ridiculously overworked producer, Tanya Koncheva, and my totally indispensable and awesome colleague, Pavel Butorin, proprietor of the equally indispensable and awesome Twitter feed, Russia Police Watch, which you can and should follow at Bruce Police Watch. I'd also like to remind you, you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, you can read the Power Vertical blog at rfrl.org, and you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week, and now, as always, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.